Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, and good afternoon, Jen.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I have announcements to get us started here.
Okay.
Our Reflective Listening Buddies program offers awareness practitioners unique support. It requires participants to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes. A new quarter of this popular program begins July 15th. And do you find that your efforts to keep a commitment are sabotaged by conditioning? The Keeping Commitments Buddy program, also starting July 15th, pairs participants with a buddy for accountability and support during this compassionate training. And the summer of Sangha is starting soon. Our spiritual home at 4 Acres Zen Center in gorgeous Sequim, Washington, will host week-long and weekend retreats offering yoga, meditation, guidance, and workshops. In addition, it will be possible to accept the precepts with this practice during the summer offerings. Slots are open in week-long retreats June 14th and June 30th, and in weekend retreats in July and August.
Yeah, that is getting very real, Michael. We were putting some things in the meditation hall tent today that made it feel like, wow, we must be having people come on retreat very soon. So fun.
Very exciting. Very fun.
Yeah.
And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders, if you'd like to talk with Jen tonight, please press *6 and then 1 to make cash show. And a conversation on one topic, please. And about 5 minutes is great. And Jen, I also wanted to encourage folks to get in the queue also.
All right.
All right. And I think we're ready to get started here, Jen.
Okay.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Jen. Hi, Michael. It's Greta.
Hey, Greta.
Hey. So I have kind of a spiritual opportunity. That's it.
Okay. Very good.
So I've been looking at the assignments in the year long in relation to my attitude toward my partner who has presented me with the situation that he wants to end our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there's a lot of steps to take from that decision until we're complete with it.
Right.
So I'm like in the blaming, shaming, resenting posture, and then realizing that, that's a conditioned process. That's not where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And when I'm here by myself, as I have been for most of the month, it's delightful. I can turn my attention to life and just, not 100% of the time by any stretch of the imagination, but that's our assignment, right? So I keep coming back. And so I suspect that that's what I need to keep doing. But I get so wrapped up in the stories as soon as it just this and that and the other thing, and I'm just calling in sort of for support about bringing myself back to one, really.
Yeah, that's perfect. And Greta, when you say it's really as soon as, meaning as soon as you're not alone, as soon as the other person is in the situation with you?
Well, I was being a little obtuse there. It's as soon as what I meant, like, in my present experience, because he's not back yet, is as soon as I drop my awareness or drop my guard, so to speak, for a second, the stories just start. And so I'm there, I'm like, no, we're not telling that story, we're washing the dishes.
Exactly. And, I mean, it really is, Greta. It's why we talk about when things like this come around in our lives, the gift of it is that that's what's required of us, right? It's literally, you have no choice.
Yeah.
If you don't keep your attention here, it's just going to eat you alive. And most, many, many, many times in our lives are not like that. And so we can, Sherry uses this term, I heard her use it the other day, it's one of my favorites, wool gathering, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wool gathering, not realizing we're utterly lost in conditioned mind. But there's nothing that's really reflecting that. There's nothing that's really signaling that to us. But when we're in a situation like you're describing, it's immediate. When we go off, that story is just right there, ready to come at us. So you're required to be here. And when you're here, you described it so beautifully, it's glorious. When you're completely here and there's no attention left over to be on that story, it's perfectly all right.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, there's a conversation about, well, in my previous experience, you know, it's not glorious when I'm coming back here around another person. It's like, yeah, okay, I'm present. It's just conditioned mind just wants to have a story about everything, every single thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's really the mastery training, right? So there are times when it's easier than others. And for a lot of us, it's much easier when we're by ourselves, when we're not in the presence of another human being. We always say that. That's pretty much the highest level it gets, right? We're in sitting meditation, walking meditation, working meditation, and then there's interacting with other human beings. That's as high level as it gets to stay in awareness as that's happening. So, you know, that's the place where a lot of compassion can come in. You know, so when there is another person in the scenario, you know, just tons of compassion, doing the best we can, coming back, you know, what twist ties on fingers, you know, anything to assist us to remember in the moment. And there's also that place where, you know, the story rolls around again and wants to get you. And exactly as you described, nope, we're not having that conversation. We're doing the dishes right now.
Yeah, I just saw the story that it has been trying to get me with is that if I'm compassionate, that means that then I'm going to have to give in to whatever his story happens to be. And I saw that in a little different frame earlier today as really just a childhood conditioned place of, you know, giving up what I want, you know, my authentic self for what somebody else wants. And, you know, that's where coming back to presence has made all the difference is then I know who I am or how I am or how I want to be or whatever it is, where I want to be here.
Exactly. So I don't know if you heard the show this morning, but there was a beautiful conversation around just this very topic today. You know, that place of the term I think that Ashwini used was seeding the ego position. Right?
Yes. Yep. Yep.
And what's so brilliant about that is the true, when that's truly what's coming up in the moment, seeding the ego position.
Right.
That doesn't throw the human being under the bus.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, it's helpful to say it out loud because I feel like I'm going to be talking it down in that very way of, seeding the ego position, like taking the juice out of that story doesn't mean I'm going under the bus.
Exactly. Exactly. In fact, in my experience, first of all, there's an acceptance in that, right? The seating the ego position comes with a great deal of acceptance of the whole situation and the, the all harmful thoughts, words, and deeds.
Right.
You know, okay, all right, yes. And with that, so often comes a release. And then there can be the clarity of what actually is needed. If there's something for me to communicate, great, it's there to communicate. If there's something I want to ask for, great, there's the ability to ask for it without needing that any particular outcome to happen around it. So it's neither side of the duality. It's not, you know, I'm right and this is important to me and da 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 da, or no, I can't, I have to, you know, whatever that person thinks, you know. It's that middle way of presence.
Right, right. That's really helpful to point that out again, because, yeah, it's like all the tools go out of the brain and there's just, you know, deer in the headlights kind of thing. Just have to get back in the breath and take my time.
Exactly, Greta. And that to me is, I mean, you're talking about as high level as it gets, right? It's just,
yeah,
I would project triggering everything, all the, you know, the very, very core kinds of things. So that place of, okay, yeah, what I'm going for is to be awareness through it. And that's going to happen sometimes, and sometimes it's not. And so to be ready with the compassion right there. So when you wake up and realize that that hasn't happened, there's just a huge amount of welcome back, so glad you're here, how can I support you? You know, is there some extra support you want to put into place? You know, that's the approach we want to take with it.
Oh, thank you, Jen. That's super helpful. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll take good care, Greta, and let us know.
I will. Thank you so much. See you soon.
All right. Yeah. Gusho.
Gusho.
Thanks for joining us, Greta. And Jen, what occurs to me after that conversation is the way to see the woman who's, you know, and then do that.
Michael, you are going away from me. I don't know if it's me or you.
Can you hear me? I'll bring the next caller on.
I can hear you now, yes.
Okay, let me bring our next caller on.
Okay.
Hello, this is Jamie in Newark, Delaware.
Hey, Jamie.
Well, as usual, I'm thinking about different things I could talk about, but and just getting on the program is a positive step, or being in the queue on whether I get on or not, a positive step.
Yeah, exactly. For calling into the show, that's one huge step. And putting yourself into the queue, there's another one. Yep.
Right. So I'm already a winner.
Exactly. There's nowhere to lose at this point. You've already won. That's great, Jamie.
I'm thinking about how sometimes I look at how I work my overall program, living compassion program, my Zen program, and I know sometimes I think that I'm somewhere between doing nothing and doing what I should, what I could be doing, and sometimes instead of using the word could, I use the word should. The reality is, I mean, I know the things I could do, but in addition to what I'm doing, but there are also a lot of things that I am doing, and I have every opportunity to add more, you know, do other things or more of what I'm doing. Part of that's focus too, because I think I can sort of drift away with my focus and at times and sort of let the program is on a look. I'm not as aware of what I'm doing or not doing.
Right.
And sometimes I sort of think that, okay, as long as I live in compassion and do whatever I want and don't hurt anybody, then I can sort of just do what I want. But then I also see that what I do day to day is important.
Say that last part again, Jamie.
What I do day to day is important, and to be aware of the time I do daydreaming or looking at a computer or watching television. It's not something to punish myself about, but
exactly
it's something to remind myself.
Yeah. Let me see if I'm with you, Jamie. So just first of all, let me see if I heard that last part. So, you know, okay, you watch TV or whatever. That's not something to allow the voices to beat you over. You're just aware, oh, okay, you know, I was watching TV, which, P.S., you know, I mean, in terms of a content, you know, you may or may not have been conscious while that was happening, right? So what we'd be going for ultimately is to be aware, to be conscious through all of it, right?
Right.
And so with what you're describing, so I think you started off by saying you feel like you're with practice, you're somewhere between doing nothing and doing either what you could or sometimes what's called you should be doing. You're somewhere in between those two places.
Yeah. And that can even be beating us, some negative, some criticism of myself.
Or the voices, right? Basically wanting to stand back and assess you on your practice.
Right.
Which is an important part to see, right? Because when it's inside our head and we're not questioning it, I project we get into that conversation. Well, I mean, it's true. I'm doing some, but I mean, I probably could be doing more. Maybe I should be doing more, right? But we never stop to realize, wait a minute, that voice, first of all, tends to say you're not doing as much as you could be doing. So what is that voice that's commenting on my awareness practice and clearly cares not a whit about my awareness practice and really would rather I didn't do more? You know, it's good to get to remember where it's coming from.
Exactly. That is good. I'm glad you reminded me of that. And there are two things I've been thinking about. One is doing the retreat on or the workshop on commitments, because that's a way I can work on my day-to-day practice. And I was reading the precepts today, and reading them more is another way I could strengthen my practice, I think. And that's a positive approach. It's not a negative.
Yeah. Exactly. And so that leads me to a question as you were talking, Jamie, I was going to ask, do you want to do more practice? Is that something you're feeling called to add more practice into your days?
And be a little bit more consistent with at the same time realizing that there's some practical limitations, but but I think there's room for doing some more, it's an opportunity.
It is. And do you have a sense, how would you articulate what it is that's calling you to do more practice? Like, what is it that you would hope to get from that, to have more practice in your days?
More results. I don't want it to be coming from ego telling me that I have to.
Exactly.
To do it. So I want it to come from, this is simply going to help, and why not? It's not that time consuming. It doesn't take that much more effort or time. Why not do it? But yeah, you're right. I could do it from an ego standpoint.
Just to quickly underline, Jamie, you just said something that I hear Sherry say a lot, that you know, we have this idea that, well, I don't have time to be aware. But the funny part is the core of awareness practice is that, being aware. So technically, we could practice that with everything in our lives. So I, you know, need to cook myself dinner. Okay, well, let me practice being aware as I'm cooking dinner. and now it's time to eat. Okay, I'll practice mindful eating. And now it's time to interact with my family. Okay, to the best of my ability, I'm going to practice being aware as I'm interacting with my family. You know, so the amazing part is that in terms of the core practice of practicing being aware, that's something we actually can do all the time. And then when you said a minute ago that you want to practice more for results, I project that's what? Because you want to be more present in your life, because you want to be, how would you describe that? What are those
more,
results?
More compassionate, more...
More compassionate. Mm-hmm.
More centered.
Mm-hmm.
More... less controlled by the ego.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so to me, the reason I was asking about that is, to me, it's so helpful to touch into what it is that I'm practicing for, because then it really does become something that I want to do, not something I should do, exactly as you said, not something that, you know, ego says, well, you know, you really should be practicing more. I mean, if you are a better person, then you would ha ha ha. Well, that's completely irrelevant. But to tune into, you know, it really feels good to go around in your life feeling compassion and being present to everything, to the miracle of being alive, and to being aware as I go through my day. I mean, all of that, that's miraculous. And I'd really love to be in that place more of the time. And so what I predict, what you intuit is, well, more formal practice will assist me with that. Well, great. You know, then we can kind of get on board with being that which supports Jamie to have the life that he actually wants to have. And then it could be as simple as, you know, a structure like you check in each Sunday. Okay, well, which things do I feel called to add this week? Well, precepts has been done. Let me read the precepts, and I'm going to do that for 15 minutes before I go to bed, or something that's very simple and very tangible.
Yes, I like that kind of tangible. But yeah, it can be simple. Simple's often better, I think. But,
yeah, me too. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, you've given me some good ideas to work with and look at, and I do appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, one other thing I just wanted to say, Jamie, the thing we used to say a lot as we were ending retreat, and people would go off, you know, so inspired, and they'd, you know, want to meditate for, you know, hours out of every day. And we'd often say, take a commitment, cut it in half, and cut it in half again. And then that's probably the perfect commitment to start with. You can always up it later. But that's such a great, because it keeps us focused on the process of it instead of the content, instead of it being made into a contest. It really keeps it on the focus on, as you say, what I'm practicing to be compassionate, not to be, you know, good, or to be in a contest of whether I'm doing as much practice as I should, but to really stay tuned into the process. And as you say, the commitment buddies is a great structure for that.
I think that helps me with consistency something. So, why not? Okay. This is good. Awesome. So,
thanks, Jamie.
Gosho. Take care.
Gosho.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us, Jamie. And Jen, I love that topic about wanting to practice and not having it go on the should list. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of practice, and I love practice, and if I don't feel like meditating one day, I don't. And the deeper desire is always there. And it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is, Michael. And, you know, that reminded me of one thing that Jamie talked about that we actually didn't touch on, is that sense of sort of a slow, vague slide. You know, things are getting a little nebulous. And I just saw when you said that, so, you know, I don't feel like meditating one day, and I don't. And then maybe the next day I don't feel like it again. And the next day I don't feel like it again.
Yeah.
Right? And at that point, you really can, honestly, you can turn to the mentor and say, Something feels off here. Can we check in about this?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's so amazing because there the mentor is going to be to just, I mean, in my experience, the mentor has nothing going about you should meditate, you shouldn't meditate, is so happy to sit there and look at that with me. And of course, what I'm going to get to is I want to sit for all the reasons Jamie just described and all the reasons we all experience. And so, and if it's, if I'm getting talked out of it for whatever reason, then I can make a commitment, you know, with the mentor and then maybe use something like commitment buddies or calling into open air or whatever it is to help myself stay accountable to that.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, fabulous. And Jen, it's time for a good news update, and I'm going to bring your guest on now.
Excellent. Thank you.
And your guest is live, and I'll turn it over to you, Jen.
All right. I'm pleased to be joined by Anne, who is here to speak with us about her experience of reading the Africa blog. Welcome, Anne.
Hey, Jen. Good evening. Happy to be here.
Good. So, yeah, tell us what's inspiring to you, what you see as you've read the Africa blogs.
Well, I mean, every single one of them inspires me. I'm kind of floored, even though, you know, I've been a part of it since it started. I'm kind of floored that it's happening, you know, and I'm just so in awe of all the people who make it happen and all the, I mean, something you said at the on the last update, something about, you know, just watching the transformation. It's like getting an injection of inspiration every time I read one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And one of the things that I marvel at with that, Anne, is to realize, I mean, we get busy, right, with practice here. And like right now, we're at Summer Sangha, you know, getting that place ready. People are coming in. There's all kinds of things happening, you know, and all those year-long retreat assignments that happen every single week and, you know, radio shows and all that. And meanwhile, every single day, 365 days a year, the team is in Cantalumba feeding 1,000 kids.
I mean, think of that, Jen. I mean, 1,000 children. I mean, you can say it very easily, but I mean, 1,000
children. One, two. Just picture them walking in the gate and 1, 2, 3, 4.
100 times 10. I got my math right. I remember a friend of mine when her daughter turned, I can't remember, 5 or something. She did this thing for her to try to get the concept of 100, and she had 100, I don't know what, teddy bears or 100 this or 100 that. And that's what I think of myself as, this 5-year-old who can't grasp, put her head around 1,000.
Right.
I mean, that is a lot.
It's a lot. You can't wrap your head around it until you drive in the car up to the property, the Living Compassion Compound in Cantalumba, and try to open your door at the time when all the little ones are there. And they're just jumping up and down, and they want to dance and sing. And then you start to get a little bit of a sense of what 1,000 children is.
And how many did we start with? Was it 100?
25.
25. I mean, look at what practice can do. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that just is so inspiring to me is that people here in the United States, well, all over the world, really, when you listen to the radio show, are diligently practicing to go beyond suffering, and they are contributing and participating in transformation for a whole other community. I mean, it's just so inspiring to me.
It really is, Anne. And you know what's funny? We did not plan this way. This life just did it, as it always does. The history postcard that's coming out tomorrow is, the timing is brilliant for what you're talking about. It's just absolutely brilliant. Because it really underscores how that project in Cantalumba is our practice. And it literally was life handed the invitation to Sherry. Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh. And I think it was 2004. I think it was literally 20 years ago, just passed, that Sherry was in Italy. And
yes, and wow.
Yeah.
Someone Brother John said, come to
Zambia. And of course, guess what Sherry said? Yes.
Yes. Oh my heavens, yes. So that's what the history card is about when this comes
no,
out?
No, it's not about
Africa.
That. Oh. It's not about that. I mean, it is about Africa, but it's the it. You'll have to. I'm not going to give it away. You'll have to read it.
Okay,
but it's
okay,
just you'll see
wait.
How the timing is just brilliant. What made me think of it, Anne, was you basically making that connection of what practice can. I mean, you got to use the word do, right? There must be some what practice can be. When practice is practice, what happens? What unfolds from there? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, and what a contribution we can make, and you know, if we don't serve something greater than ourselves, you know, all those quotes. I think about, you know, a little clod of dirt sniveling because the world doesn't make us happy. You know, just choosing another way to say, you know, there's a different energy we can create in the world rather than hatred and complaining, and we can make a huge difference.
Yep. And that energy, it's so the conversation we were just having with Jamie, that when the attention is here, and Greta in many ways, right, when the attention is here, that energy that's normally being siphoned off to conditioned mind is available. And what comes from that is participation. We just want to participate with love, with compassion, with care.
Well, and it's a miracle, I think, that we can get to a place where the energy isn't being siphoned off by conditioned mind, and we can use that energy for humanity or community or participation or whatever you want to put in there.
Yes, exactly so. Exactly so. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that's so joyful and inspiring about spending time in Cantalumba is that folks who are living in Cantalumba are, in many cases, facing circumstances that, you know, if many of us were in those circumstances, boy, would it be challenging not to spend all of our time and energy on how hard it is and how much this stinks and why me and all of those things. And yet, as far as we can tell, that is not where the energy goes. That, you know, I mean, we often write about this in the blog, that what happens on the property is, you know, sitting around, what, doing the dishes or shelling the peanuts to grind into the peanut butter for the peanut butter rice or whatever it is, singing. Everyone's singing, having a great time, right? Just living life, just here, present to all of it.
Wow, very different life experience.
Yeah. And that reminds me, as I said that so there's, you know, the periodic Africa update on the, I'm trying to think where, it's under the What's New tab on the website and also on the Africa site. And
right.
There are also the photographs that Teresa and the team sent. And that's on the news update, I think the news tab at the top of the Africa, when you're on the Africa site. And those are so much fun. You know, they're taking photos, telling us what's going on. So that's where all the sort of latest news can be found on a pretty regular basis.
Oh, yeah. And thanks for saying that, Jen, reminding us where that is, because it's just so fun to go on there and get the updates and read about what's happening and just realize how interconnected we all are.
Yeah, truly. And how lucky we are. And that's one of the main things that sort of at the at part of the history postcard tomorrow, how lucky, fortunate we are that life did give us a way to practice in this way, to give that to our Sangha.
That's such a good point. We didn't have to go out looking for it. Life delivered it to us.
Yep.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yep.
Yeah, and as you said, you know, all that was necessary, in quotes, all, right, is to say yes.
Yeah.
So just such a good model. And so, as I said, started with so inspiring.
Yeah.
And I'm just so grateful for everybody who, you know, contributes every single day to making it happen. It's awe-inspiring.
Yeah, thank you for that. Actually, one last piece that reminded me, I thought about a few minutes ago, too, when you were talking, So there's what practice creates, and so there are people practicing all over the world, and one of the things that many people are moved to do from their gratitude is to help make this project happen financially. So yeah. It really is Sangha's project, you know? I mean, the whole thing is possible because of so many people's practice.
Yeah, that's really a beautiful thing. It's possible because of so many people's practice. And it's a model of being in the world in such a different way than is the norm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And not looking to ideas of how it should be the quote-unquote experts and looking to our hearts for, you know, what feels right in this moment.
Yes, exactly. So not coming from there's something wrong here and we need to fix it. And P.S., let's go find the expert, talk to the experts about how to do that. But rather, okay, we've been invited and are moved to participate. So let's hold hands and see what's possible.
Mm.
And the answer is a lot.
Oh, that's beautiful, Jen. I like that. Yeah, a lot. The answer is a lot is possible. Wow. Well, and it's just so inspiring, you know, that ending the conversation in conditioned mind creates all this energy that can be used to participate in something so much bigger than ourselves. That's just so great.
Well put. Well put. Well, thanks, Anne, for being with us today to talk about it.
Yes, thank you, Jen. Go happy.
All right. Go happy. And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Anne. And that was fabulous. And we have another caller here, Jen.
Okay, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George.
Hey, George.
Hey, George.
Hey, from Kerhonkson, New York, upstate New York.
Okay, great.
And I just wanted to call in and catch up. I haven't, it's been months at least since I called in. And I wanted to tell you about an experience I had that was quite extremely intense, and the results were quite amazing. I've lived, as far as I can tell, pretty much all my life in a half in and half out of where I want to be, so to speak. That is, from about April through October, I'm in a state of really kind of conscious, compassionate awareness a good deal of the time. It's kind of my dominant state, I would say, during that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And gardening and the sunlight and the warmth and everything has supported that to a large extent. The darker days of, especially here in the Northeast, the lower sun and cold and so on and so forth, usually fed the opposite, kind of a bipolar thing, where I would go into, my general condition was self-hate, was self-judgment, but I got very good at, since I've had this, as far as I can tell, since I came out of the womb, and maybe before that, I got very good at faking it till you make it kind of thing, you know, and pretending. I felt, that I was normal. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want anybody to know how I really felt. So I might share it with one or two people, or I might call into open air or something and share some of it, that kind of thing. And all this time, I mean, all these years, I've been pretty faithful to recording and listening. You know, I would had it set up so that I'd get into the car and turn on the car, and there it would be, right? Mm. Recording. Mm-hmm. And I would be listening to it. Mm. And I did that pretty consistently for probably a few decades, is my guess. I haven't done that much of it lately, but I've been doing other things that are within the same vein, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I still mm-hmm. do some of them. I mean, I still have it in my car. Mm-hmm. I've worn out 4 digital recorders.
Uh-huh.
Actually, worn out the RCA plug.
Okay. Uh-huh.
It's not that. Doesn't yeah. leave a lot. But anyway, I've got 4 of them full, absolutely full.
Mm.
And so this winter, as I felt myself sliding into depression and anxiety and so on, once again, I said, no, I'm not willing to fake it till I make it this year. I've had this. I'm really going to. I had turned 80 last year, so now I'm 81. I'm one day older than Sherry, actually.
Uh-huh.
And literally one day.
Got it.
And so she's my younger sister. You know, she looks up to me.
Right. Got it.
I'm also taller than she is. So, but anyway, so I decided I was going to do ketamine or psilocybin, and I was going to do therapy, and I was going to really get under this once and for all. So I did 3 ketamine sessions and ended up taking double the prescribed dose of ketamine in order to try to break. I was looking for relief. I had this idea that somehow there would be relief, that it would lift my depression or something. And in actuality, what it did was it took me deeper into the darkness.
Mm.
And so then I decided, okay, well, the ketamine didn't work, so I'm going to take psilocybin. So I did a psilocybin session, set up properly, you know, with the right, with a doctor and all of that. And that was a quote failure, unquote, as well. Mm. I got no relief whatsoever. It seemed as though I could get so far with it, and I took a full dose of the psilocybin, and I thought this is going to crack the code on what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was I just would get so far, and there would be this resistance somehow.
Mm-hmm.
With like, something was blocking me from going any further.
Mm-hmm.
So, which was very frustrating. So I felt like a failure, really like a failure. Like this is, almost like I had lost all hope. But interesting enough, the integration process from those intense experiences, and one of them was, I was just yelling and screaming and pounding the pillow and cursing and swearing and saying how, you know, really revealing, maybe for the first time in front of somebody, how horrible, absolutely horrible I felt, and what deep despair I was in and so on. And I think part of it was this person, this therapist, young man, he listened, and he just kept shaking his head, saying, oh, okay, you're doing great. You're doing great. Keep it up. Keep it up. And so what came out of that is a release of shame.
Yeah.
I was ashamed that I had whatever you want to call it, this condition, this mental illness, this, you know, this feeling, these feelings of despair and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. I was ashamed of that.
Yeah.
And I lost the shame.
Mm.
Well. So that now I don't hesitate to, and I do psycho-spiritual counseling, so I counsel mm-hmm. a number of people, and I no longer act as though I know what's going on, and I'm the therapist, and they're the client. It's mm-hmm. like, it's, we're all in this human, this wild and crazy human soup together.
Yeah.
You know, you want to care. This is a, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, George, it just so, it's so lovely to hear you say that, because it so is the core of, I project, well, I don't know if everybody has it, but it seems like those of us who gather in places like this recognize that there's something for each of us that is the thing that can get us, that we believe so deeply, we've been conditioned to believe there's something wrong with us. We should be ashamed of that. We should be able to change it. It's not okay. We have to hide it. And to have the experience that you had where you just got to see it and get past that shame, and it sounds like, you know, just be really, really listened to, you know, someone who's not at all alarmed by it, not, you know, doesn't think there's, clearly he doesn't think there's anything wrong with it. You know, it reminds me very much of the there is nothing wrong with you work that we do.
Well,
where it's just that, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, that's the basic, that is the basic teaching. In the very
exactly.
first book, there's nothing wrong with you.
Nothing.
And that is, that's it.
Yes, period. And, you know, we say that. And, I mean, first of all, I project that's what gathers us here. I mean, I know for me, when I started reading, when someone handed me a book by Sherry Huber, it was like, this is so good. I love
right.
this. I can't
yep.
wait to meet this woman. I can't wait to go on these retreats.
Yep.
And, you know,
yep.
that was just it for me. You know, that
yep.
that was it. So that's not the same as, okay, oh, right. Okay, good. I'm glad you told me. There's nothing wrong with me. I got it now, right? I just
yeah,
walked not... away from all of it.
No, it's deep. I mean, it's really deep. Buried in the unconscious, where, you know, the whole trauma study thing now that's coming up, you know, the whole realization of the trauma that is a part of humanity, that's a part of what a human being goes through.
Yeah, and you know, the thing I think is amazing about it, George, is that, let's see how I can articulate this. It's something that's been life-changing for me is to realize we don't know when the moment that you're describing is going to happen for us. And in my
right.
experience, it happens many times with many different processes and on different levels. You
yeah,
know, it might
I
happen,
guess.
Right? It happens with something, and then 5 years later, wow, I drop into an even deeper place with that I didn't even realize was still there. And to realize, I don't know when that's going to happen. I don't know if that's going to happen with a particular thing. But what if I can just practice wholeheartedly recognizing that there's nothing wrong with any of it, quote, still being there? If that's all right, if
yeah.
I can just practice not knowing when or if a particular thing is going to let go, then wow. I mean, that's freedom right there.
Oh, it's incredible. And also, you know, practicing psycho-spiritual counseling that I do, it's you're also able to completely accept the person that you're working with.
Yeah.
And the energy of that acceptance is heard. You know, the energy of that acceptance is like you're able to bathe that other person in that energy. Because you know, because that's what you're resonating.
That's what
you know?
That's what you are, period.
That's
what you are. So that's what you're experiencing, right? And I think it's why people love being around someone like Sherry Huber or practice, or because
yeah.
you feel it. You feel it. And you literally, on some level, it's like, wow, that's it. That's it. You can feel it. You're resonating with it.
Yeah.
Well, that is amazing, George. Thank you for calling in and talking about that. It's a really fun process. I mean, amazing process. Glorious process.
Absolutely glorious, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so, so grateful to be alive.
Exactly.
You're still and loving and experiencing life. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. Take good care, George.
Thank you for being there. Yeah.
Right. Gosho.
Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, George. And Jen, we have time for at least one more caller here.
Okay, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey there, it's Renee in Oregon.
Hey, Renee.
Hi, Renee.
Hi. Yeah, what a great show. I could go in all different directions of what to talk about. mostly I felt grateful from the Africa talk. It's like, always puts things in perspective when you say you're sitting around singing and laughing and they have such a different life than we do, and then we're here like all these little things are bothering me, you know. And
And if we can really take that in without self-hate, it's extraordinary. I mean, it's funny. It's supportive, isn't it? I mean, that's how I experience it.
Yeah, it is supportive. Yeah, I experience it that way as well. And it actually shifts my mindset into...
Exactly.
I don't know how to describe it, but it just shifts it into not the complaining mode or the whining mode or the conditioning, listening to conditioning telling me how everything's wrong or, you know...
It's so funny, Renee.
Not that mode, the other mode.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What just dropped in as you were saying that was it's kind of a form of seeding the ego position. It's like it reveals the ego position, and it's just, oh, I don't want that. I don't want that. That's not helping me or anything else.
Right. So I experienced that moment of everything's just not a problem anymore. Like, okay. Yeah. Like when you're on retreat or practicing a lot.
I
have been looking at... Oh, go ahead.
No, please, you go ahead.
Well, I have been looking at something new for me and that's occurred. And the last few years have just been very, very hard related to content. And I've developed some coping strategies that I never had before. And finding kind of that addictive quality to it. And feeling like, almost like I'm starting over with practice with it. You know, just... I think after you've practiced a while, you think, oh, I got this. Oh, I can do this and I can do that. And then something new comes up and I'm like, I don't got this. Like, ego doesn't have it, you know? And so...
Yeah,
and in a way, it's exciting because it's something
good for you
practice with. And
good for you.
Yeah, but
that's
it sort
huge,
of feels
Renee, isn't it?
Unfamiliar too at the same time. So
which really, I mean, that could be an advantage because, you know, there's that term beginner's mind, and at least for me, I mean, I didn't have a sense of what that was at all until I had been practicing a while and realized, oh yeah, I experienced beginner's mind at the beginning. Because it's like, in fact, it's funny, we had a Sunday group recently and I had that experience again where it suddenly dawned on me that Sherry was facilitating the group and she was talking to people and I realized that almost every single thing she said, just these simple phrases that she was using as she was facilitating people, I realized, oh my gosh, when I was first practicing, every single one of those things that she said was blowing my mind.
Oh yeah, right? I remember that.
Right?
Well, anything and anybody I, said practically that was Sherry or the people facilitating the retreat.
Yes.
So it was like I was having like light bulbs constantly going off.
Exactly. Yeah. And I suddenly had that fresh experience again of like, wow, this is amazing. And so that could be one of the fun side benefits of something like, it's funny, I never thought about it in the way you just described it, but I can definitely go to my experience of that, where it's like, wow, I feel like I'm brand new practicing with this one.
Yeah,
so this
I do. I really do feel that way. And and it's like a craving and a constant, like condition constantly coming up, wanting me to do these things. And so it's coming back to the breath and meditating on it, you know, more and process mapping and, you know, recording and listening and doing all these things to fully support the heart that knows that isn't going to be healthy to do.
Yeah. You know, what's kind of beautiful about that, if you describe it, Renee, is that so here's this thing that's come along that makes you feel kind of like it's new. You're new to practice with it. And all that you just described, you come back to the breath, you do a process map, none of those things you would have known about or known to turn to or had the training to turn to them when you first started practice. So it's almost like you're getting to play both roles now. So you're this brand new practitioner with this thing being facilitated by someone who has a long-standing practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. You do become a lot more, I guess, maybe, I don't know, self-sufficient is the right word, but something like that, right phrase, yeah.
Yeah, that you have the tools to assist her to walk through this.
Right, right, because I don't feel panicky or like I need to run from it or I feel sort of like, oh, okay, this is, but I was unconscious to it for some time. Like I was unconscious that it was happening, that I was, because it's not like, you know, I'm doing something like, I didn't start smoking again or anything like that, you know, but it's, and so it doesn't, it's acceptable in society. You know, and
got it. Yeah.
And a lot of people do it, and I think probably the whole generation is addicted to it's some, you know, it's online things, and so it's like there's people addicted to just being online, and and you know, I didn't realize how much it was affecting me, and so once I realized that, then I woke up and went, oh wow, this is what's happening, you know, and how unhappy it can make a person.
Yeah, and that's kind of like the conversation we had with Jamie, right? Where you realize, oh, you know, I don't want to get into, I project anyway, you don't want to get into a relationship with this of like, okay, this is bad and wrong, and I got to stop doing this, right? You're basically going to get into a battering cycle with it. But instead, it's a place of waking up to realize, oh, this is having an impact. This is this is leading towards suffering, not away from suffering. So I want to start looking at this, you know, and again, to really make that, to begin a process instead of a, okay, you've seen it, cut it out, you know, stop being that bad person, but just the, okay, well, what's going on here and what do I see about it? And, you know, paying really close attention as it's going on, you know, even things like setting alarms. I remember someone talking to Sherry years ago about feeling addicted to watching movies, videos, and Sherry talking about, you know, set an alarm for every 15 minutes to go off and, you know, stop and check in, you know, just all kinds of things that can make it into truly an exploration instead of, okay, I got to get myself back in line here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't feel like that's happening other than I just don't want the after. So what I do get is more of, so it takes time away from my life in terms of doing these things, and I feel like I'm losing time or something. Like I get that sometimes. Like I don't want to be spending my time doing that. I want to be doing, you know, living life,
exactly,
being here for it. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that it causes more unconsciousness, which leads towards suffering.
Yeah. So again, some of the conversations we've had this evening pointing at that place of starting to put structures in place that will assist you to make the choice that you want to make.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I have looked at that, and I know we're close to time, and how do I want to spend my time as well was another question that arose. So
that's a great question.
I love to paint. I love to play golf. Yeah. I love to, exercise. I love to garden. There's all these things that I want to do, and also practice awareness with it as well. So,
Well, and that could be one of those. And it truly is, so here's the time going to this addiction. And then slowly, or quickly, however it happens, choosing not to do that. And then what a gift to have that time, right? Mm-hmm. And that's so fun to really look at, gosh, here are all these things I want to do. And you suddenly get to do them because you have this time back, right? So then there's the, whatever it is, put them all in a hat and pick one out. Which one do we get to do now?
Yes, exactly. So it does feel like kind of going into a cave for a little while and coming back out and, wow, there is a life, that's not in that cave of whatever was happening.
And can't you just feel life? Well, welcome back, Renee. It's so great to have you.
I do feel that. Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Renee.
Take care.
So happy.
So happy.
Thanks for joining us, Renee. And Jen, we've come to the end of the show, and what a great show it was.
Indeed. Thank you, Michael.
Yes, thank you, Jen. Thanks to all the callers and to everyone, and go happy.
All right, go happy. Good night.
Good night.